G7. The Law of the Self-Evolution of Understanding Through the Idea of Christian Science. Number 1A.
Okay, we start this week class with the title, The Law of the Self-Evolution of the Idea of Christian Science. Quite a long title, and you will see that it has to do with quite a terrific subject, namely with the subject that the understanding of Christian Science, of the idea of Christian Science, is self-evolving. That we as human people don't have to evolve it, but that it is in the nature of science that science evolves itself. And that is a very great question, I think a question nobody has asked it, himself up to now, and has done some research on this. So, this is the main point, and in order to introduce this terrific subject, I just perhaps go back to our beginnings, namely that we have a Christian Science textbook. We adhere to that textbook. This is the textbook we rely on. We base our teaching on it, and I want to stay with that. I feel that's a book that God has written and has dictated to Mrs. Eddy, and that it is not just a book that has been written by some visionary, but is the text of reality itself. Now, we have studied the Christian Science textbook for quite a while, some a lifetime, some over 20, 30, 40 years. I know that textbook, I don't tell you how long, it's so long that you hardly believe it. If we have read that textbook over and over, perhaps we come at the point where we ask ourselves now, what is really the main subject, or what are really the main subjects in the textbook? When we look away from all those 6,000 or so sentences in it and ask ourselves, what is it really all about? I feel that we can come to four big questions which would be the tonality of work, Christ, Christianity, and science. Namely, I think we all could somehow say to ourselves, well, what fascinated us with that textbook was that Mrs. Eddy was defining what God or being is, the definition of God, the definition of that one being. I think that has really made a great impact on our consciousness, because that question, what is God, no matter how we would call God, the term doesn't matter, but over ages and ages, religions and cultures always have asked themselves, what is that being that governs everything, that governs the universe, that seems to be far above human beings, far above human thinking? They called it God, we called it God, others called it differently. What is that being? And that Mrs. Eddy for the first time would come and give us a blunt, exact answer. She answers what is God and gives us, say, the seven synonymous terms. Now, if we are asking the theologians, or if we are going into these big libraries where there are tens of thousands of books about theology and about God, we will not find a single book that gives a satisfactory definition of God. They all try to circumscribe God with all kinds of qualities as creator, as the first cause, or as the omnipotent power, or the intelligence, the divine intelligence, or something like that. But they never could really define God. And if we listen today on the radio, on the TV, or read books from these outstanding theologians, they always try to define God, and then after they have tried to define God, they say, after all, this is not the real definition, we can't define God really in its wholeness. Mrs. Eddy did it. She did it. I don't know if every one of us feels the grace we have in this century, that we live in this century, that we are drawn to the teaching of Christian Science, which alone gives an answer to this terrific question, what is God? This is so big that it should really surpass all our other gratitudes for healing or for this and that in Christian Science. This is so big that we should really consciously be aware day in and day out of the grace that we have, that we know what God is. That's one thing that impresses the reader of the textbook. Another main point is the Christ standpoint, namely, what impresses the reader or the Christian Scientist is that he has found, perhaps after looking into various religions, into various Christian groups and cults and so on, a science that is showing how God helps humanity, the healing aspect of God, the Christ. This is unique to the Christian Science textbook, that it shows really the relationship between God and man as a saving factor in being, as a saving agent, a healing agent in being. This is terrific. Recently I was reading a book from one of our most well-known theologians in Europe. He just had printed a new book on the great Christian thinkers, and has shown those great Christian thinkers what their main point was. And in every one of them one could see that they were asking themselves that question, how on earth does it work that God takes care of humanity? What is, in my terms, what is, so to say, the healing mechanism that operates between God Almighty somewhere, which they can't define, and its relationship to man and helping man to solve his problems, his material problems, his corporeal problems, his business problems, his family problems, his don't know why problems. They were not able, although thinker, to give a definite answer. The one was taking this attitude, the next one was taking the opposite attitude, the third one taking both attitudes somehow mixed together, and so on, but never a clear-cut law, or let's say a saving mechanism, as Mrs. Eddy was giving through the Christ translation. The Christ, that divine message from God to man, well, that is a definition that all the other great thinkers also have, that there is a message from God to man. But what is the law of this translation mechanism? That's the great question. And Mrs. Eddy gives it. So again, we have here something absolute unique that you can't find in any other religion. So another point to be grateful, and then perhaps the third point that made an impact on our consciousness, certainly, though I speak from myself, but I think over the more than 60 years of being in the Christian Science field, I know pretty well what is going on in the thinking of Christian Scientists. I think the third point was that for the first time, one began to know what is man. The definition of man in a completely different way than what usually is called man. Away from the mortal, material, corporeal concept, away to the idea man, that's so different from everything else you read. You can read the whole stuff today of the New Age literature. They will never see that man is a divine idea, that it is a scientific idea, that it has nothing to do with the material body, that has nothing to do with his personal sense, etc., etc., etc. Something completely new. A new concept of man and the universe. And the universe. That universe which we consider and with which we deal is not the real universe, but it's a counterfeit universe. It's a deflection of the real universe. Therefore, combined with this question is that terrific point, what is reality and what is unreality? A question that you can follow back into history right down the ages, thousands and thousands of years since the Babylonians or even before that age, they were always asking that question, what is reality and what is not reality? What is real, what is unreal? And they have never found the answer. They have given answers, naturally, but they were never the right answers. And here is a textbook that gives a clear-cut answer about reality, therefore about the real man and the real universe. Quite something terrific. And we are perhaps not grateful enough for this very fact that we, for the first time in history, we get a clear-cut answer on these three points that I have just presented. And I come to a fourth. Also, fourth point has been in the foreground of forefront of our thinking, namely that Mrs. Eddy introduced the term science into Christianity. This is something very new, because you know, if you go back in history, you know that that is just that which the church didn't want, that the church didn't want to be a science and science didn't want to be a religion, that there was a split all through between religion and science, between Christianity and science, and yet everyone felt somehow we want to have a Christianity, but that Christianity should be such that one can understand that Christianity in order to be able to demonstrate it and to live it and to prove it, which means that that Christianity must rely on science, on laws, on the rules. But there was no such wedding in the world between religion and science, or between Christianity and science. And Mrs. Eddy came along and said, you know, actually they are the same thing. Christianity must be science and science must be Christianity. Putting together the two into one, so to say, resolving the dualistic sense and giving a monistic sense that Christianity and science is the same. But not only that was under consideration in Mrs. Eddy's time, and I would say should be the consideration of our time. So to say, as we have been learning point one, what is the Word, point two, what is the Christ, point three, what is Christianity, man and the universe, we must see that we are not satisfied by just calling Christian science a science. We must jolly well understand the scientific nature of science. That's something very different. It's very easy to say, well, Christian science is science. Well, that's that doesn't mean a thing. They are just words. But when you ask now, what is the scientificalness of science? What are the scientific elements of this Christian science? What are the laws? What are the orders? What are the rules? What is the system? What is the method? See, the moment you ask that, then everybody's done. They don't know what. They say, well, science is law. When you ask what is law, they say law is science. That's no answer. So we are living today in a century when, through the works of John Dorley, we began to know really something more about the scientific nature of Christian science, why it is scientific, that it has scientific elements in it and that we can know them. But time goes on, and the question is, and this is the main point of this whole week, and I don't know if I can circumscribe it or define it properly. The question is, John Dorley lived nearly half a century ago. And we can't just fall back constantly on John Dorley and say, John Dorley said and John Dorley did and John Dorley wrote. Well, he did that. But if we are in the age of John Dorley, or we say when we were in the age of John Dorley, when John Dorley was here in the 40s, he didn't teach what 50 years ago Kimball was teaching. He taught something else. Kimball was a great Christian Science teacher. John Dorley was a great Christian Science teacher, but what they were teaching was very different. Don't you agree? Very different. Now, should we go on, or is that the purpose of our life, to stall, so to say, there John Dorley gave us his last word? Or should we go on? Isn't that in the nature of being, that being goes on? Is it not in the nature of science, even if you fall back on natural science? Does natural science today teach what Newton was teaching, what Kepler was teaching, what Galilei was teaching, or the Greeks were teaching? They don't. They went on. That's the nature of science, that science has a development within itself, has an unfoldment within itself. That's the nature of science, that it goes on. It is the nature of being, that being goes on. That being never has an end, or it will be finite. If being is infinite, then we profess that Christian Science talks about the infinite being. In Christian Science, there is the one being, and that one being is easily defined as an infinite principle with an infinite idea. So, therefore, the question is, now, what are we going to do? We have this wonderful teaching of John Dorley, on which I rely 100%, but is that the end of the story? Should we consider it the end of the story? If we don't consider it the end of the story, how does the story go on? What authority do we have to go on? There are 50 years now that we went on, and I would say relying completely on John Dorley, but little by little one could see that the idea of science was developing, was little by little developing, unfolding, evolving. But how? What is our attitude, so that science itself can unfold within us? That's the big question. If you go back to the natural scientists, not everyone that has studied at the university and has been well trained in a subject at the university could afterwards go on and be an inventor, or could be a discoverer, or could be a great shot, or could be a laureate for the Nobel Prize, and so on. Not everyone, but there are those, and those alone matter. Those who can always do the produce the same machine, they don't matter. They can go on their whole life and produce the same machine, the same machine. Would we be happy to ride in a Ford T2? Isn't it the Ford T2, the one of the first cars you had? Would we like that? Yeah. Could you understand what I said? Yeah. You like a better car. Well, who made a better car? What was going on in science to have a better car? And so in every other science. And so the question that we very earnestly must consider and culture is actually the question, what is the law that rules within science that brings forth new insight into science, that brings forth new insight which we never dreamt of? That's my question. That's the question of this whole week. The whole week is a question, how can we go on, not go on by repeating and repeating and repeating what has been said 50 years and 100 years ago, but how can we go on listening or being prepared for the self-evolution of science? That's a big question. That's a very big question. One thing I can perhaps say at this moment, which we have to see clearly, which we know for a long time, but it's coming up and up again and again. When we read about Christian Science literature, not our literature, not Dorley or my literature or those who have been students of John Dorley. But when we read Christian Science movement literature, let's say that way, or he listened to lecture, they always talk about the religion of Christian Science, don't they? I see it all over the place. Even in the newspaper, when they talk about what's going on in the Christian Science movement, they always talk about the religion of Christian Science. Why? Because the movement talks about the religion of Christian Science. That's blah, blah. Because, first of all, Mrs. Eddy never uses that term. She never uses that term. You can look it up in the concordances. She never uses the term the religion of Christian Science. Why should we use it? Why doesn't she use it? Because we can see that when we take the concordances and look up every reference that she has on religion and have, for instance, the textbook, which is our teaching book, she has about 40 references on religion. And out of those 40 references on religion, mostly, I think, up over 30 of them are negative. How can you use a term that is negative in the Christian Science textbook and use it as belonging to science, the religion of Christian Science? This is hideous. And if you take those very, very, very few positive statements on religion, so that's okay. She also speaks positively on medicine and positively, say, on marriage and positively on this and that and the other subject. But she never uses that term in a with capitalization. Never. But Mrs. Eddy's discovery was the discovery of the one being that could be reduced to capitalized terms, to the seven synonyms, to the four sides of the city, to the four levels of science. But religion has never been capitalized. Therefore, we cannot put religion, so to say, as a synonymous term for Christian Science. This is not true. We can see from this misuse, so to say, that we are so deeply ingrained that Christian Science has something to do with religion. And what I want to show through this week, how this is not true. That these are misconceptions that we can really find in the Christian Science teaching and in the Christian Science textbook. So, the big question which we have to consider is there a law? Is there a law behind the self-evolution of science? So that this would mean not we as students have to evolve Christian Science further. We can't do that because we would use the human mind, our small mind, our local mind, our limited mind, and that can never, never see something new. Or we would have to use inspiration or things like that, exalted thought and so on. Well, that's all right. Let Eastern philosophers have that and be happy with it. In the West, we should be scientists and therefore should rely on the age in which we live, which is science, and see that every progress must come through a scientific method, through a scientific procedure, and through scientific elements and tools. So that we would ask a very heretical, for the movement, heretical question, how does Christian Science evolve? I think we turn here.